You are listening to another Screenfish One-on-One, this one live with writer-director Dion Taylor. Dion's latest thriller is called Traffic, and it deals with the realities of the sex trade in the United States. In a very personal interview, we're excited to talk to Dion about his reasons for creating the film, his decision to film it as a thriller as opposed to a documentary, and how this affects him as a parent. Welcome to the conversation. Welcome to Screenfish. Thanks so much for talking with me, Dion. You know, I was wondering, what was it that inspired you to write and direct Traffic?
Man, you know, that movie, it's funny, I feel like I've been talking about this, you know, for a while now. The movie, the idea, you know, I never thought in a million years, man, I would be doing a movie called Traffic, especially just as a, you know, African-American male female, male director. It just probably wasn't going to be in the cards for me. What happened was my daughter's school sent this email to me, man, one day, and it was like, you know, be careful dropping your kids off at the school. I mean, at the local mall, because kids are being trafficked there.
What?
Yeah, I was just blown away, man, because, you know, obviously you've seen it all, right? Like we've seen guns. You get letters about everything now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Bomb threats. I mean, you name it. But that was like the first time for me that I had seen that written in black and white to me, you know what I mean, regarding my daughter. You know, obviously as a dad first, and, you know, I just was kind of like blown away, like, man, what is this, you know? And
yeah.
I originally was like, well, that doesn't apply to us, you know what I mean, because that's not like, well, you know, we're black, and maybe that's not what's happening. And, man, I was blown away, man. I went online and Googled it and started looking up trafficking in my area. And I was just surprised, man, to see hundreds and hundreds of cases of trafficking of kids in local communities around me that have been trafficked and escaped trafficking. And then it just, I kept reading and finding out that this was a much bigger domestic problem than I ever imagined in my life. And you know, here I am thinking, oh, this is like an international thing. No one really, you know, that's not about here. And, oh, that's, you know, that's not for African-American kids or Latin. It was, man, it was, everything I thought was wrong. You know,
wow.
It was, you know, 62% of African-American women are leading the charge of being trafficked domestically, followed by Latinos, you know, underserved markets. It was like everything that I had thought about that was not what it was supposed to be. And I tell you, man, I was gearing up to write something else, and this just stayed with me. It just, the thought of it haunted me, and eventually I started, you know, as all filmmakers, I started poking around with reading more, you know what I mean? Trying to figure out the process and how you could make something like this. And I became just engulfed in reading the headlines and based, you know, on the true stories about people escaping and people that didn't escape. And eventually I wrote the film and I was like, all right, I think I'm going to really pursue this independently. And we did it. And here we are, man.
Wow. I didn't realize it was so personal. I mean, I'm actually shocked that you got a note from your daughter's school. That's stunning to me.
You know what, man? It is. And what's more interesting than that is just the fact that, you know, as I began to ask my friends, they was like, man, no, what you talking about? And I'm like, no, man, this is for real. I was like, and then just like that, like in a blink of an eye, man, right when I like kind of educated myself on it, every time I watch CNN, it's on the bottom of the ticker tape. Every time I watch the local news, it's there. And I'm like, okay, has it been here this whole time? I just didn't know it, you know what I mean? And that's when it really just kind of grabbed me. And, you know, I had already been a really big fan of, you know, old school movie called The Vanishing. That movie, you know, I went and watched that again. I just kind of was playing around with the idea of it. And I just said, man, I'm going to write this. And I'm just going to take the chance to make a movie, you know, with this as the backdrop to see if not only could we create a thriller around it, but then at the same time really figure out a way to educate, you know, a younger audience, African-American audience, a Latino audience, you know, where they could actually, we could wrap the peel around candy, you know what I mean? And,
right.
And let them take it this way. And, you know, we finished, man, and seriously, man, we had no money, no nothing, you know, just me being super passionate and, we finished the film, and I was extremely happy. You know, my daughter is now 13 years old, and, wow. you know, I let her watch it because I said, hey, you got to watch it. And she's like, oh, my God, Dad, this is crazy. And, this, and what I tried to do in the film was I tried to make the trafficking part as true to form as possible, like in terms of how you're trafficked, the needle, the dirty shot, the transportation, holding people in caves, not wanting to, I mean, holding people in holding areas, not wanting to speak to anyone in public when you are released. Like, you know, just trying to find the real beats. And, yeah, man, I'm proud of the film, man. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm excited to talk to anybody about it. You know, I'm happy to share it with anyone. I'm like, you know, it's a very cool movie.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And one thing I thought was interesting, it almost feels like two different movies, Dion, because it starts off so light and almost, you know, like this romance, and then it gets real. Can you talk about the decision to do that? Why did you handle it that way?
Yeah, I love that. I love to. Yeah, it's my, you know, we get this a lot, man. So, I mean, it's a great question. It means that you really were checked into the film, and I'm happy to hear you ask that question. Yeah, the movie was built that way. The idea behind, you know, this was a lot of different factors to allow you to feel that way. One was, you know, obviously having Dante Spinotti as a cinematographer. You know, obviously from L.A. Confidential, he, you know, I mean, Last Mohegans, this is probably one of the best to ever light anything, right? And what me and him talked about and wanted to really fight for in the film was we wanted to create a world to where the movie went from a, you know, fun-loving, kind of loose-based thriller into where it turned into what I'm going to call like a car crash.
Yeah.
Right? Where it just drops into reality. And when it drops into reality and you go down the rabbit hole, you know, the idea is here's how the rabbit hole, you know, here's where you go. Mm. And a lot of what you're feeling is through light, you know, the ability to create a noir thriller. So what we did was open the movie up with a lot of big vistas, a lot of big greens, beautiful classic car, you know what I mean? The characters are bold in frame and, you know, it's beautifully lit. All the way to when you get to the pool and the kiss and the making love and the ring. And what we begin to do is we tighten the tension. So what happens is the moment the doorbell rings and the girl comes to the door, when you run out that door and you follow that girl, the entire film from that point on becomes what we call noir, which is now the forest is lit by headlights from a car. The cabin is lit by a very dim light in the corner of a cabin, right? It just squishes everything into, and now the characters are smaller in frame. The world is, you know, vastly tighter. And what we're getting a lot, which I'm really happy that people are feeling it, it feels like you're going on another ride. And, you know, I kind of, you know, I open up with like a little bit about this, you know, to someone once, and I'll tell you the exact reason why I did it was, I was trying to explain to a few people before, like, it's kind of weird, man. If you've ever done anything in your life where you're having a great day and then something tragic happens, in a car accident, a bad phone call, a death in the family, everything warps into another world.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, I've had, I'll tell you a crazy story. You know, when I was in, you know, younger, I was carjacked. And I remember driving down the street, playing my music, you know, being a young guy, having a good time. I was actually going to pick somebody up, think maybe going to date or whatever. And I just remember randomly turning right, stopping at the stop sign and looking to my left. And I remember like someone running towards my car window with a gun and holding it up. And this is the truth. This is for real. Like I laughed. I was like, ha. Because I couldn't process. You know what I mean? I couldn't process what was happening.
Yeah.
And the moment that I realized, oh my God, this is happening, it was too late. I was already like hit twice through the car, pulled out. Like it was just like, and to this day, you know, 20 plus years later, I just, that stayed with me. And now every now and again, it's fragmented. Like now I can remember the guy, he was on the other corner. And, you know what I mean? The little things like that. So when we started making a movie, I just said, man, wouldn't it be great to actually just pull the carpet from people? You know what I mean? Like when you go on the run and it happens, you know, the movie is based in grounded in reality, and it would just be great to abruptly turn the page. And now you're in this world, you know what I mean? And it's fight or flee. But what I thought Paula did was amazing in the movie. She found a delicate balance where she's scared out of her wits, out of her mind, but at the same time, she's fighting with everything she has, trying to figure it out. You know what I mean? And trying to figure it out. And ultimately, she does, right? She gets out of this place and she's like, all right. And, you know, the end is my favorite, which is, you know, I started messing around with the idea at the very end with her and this Missy Pyle character. Like, oh, man, they should. My friend was like, man, you got to have them fight to the death. And I was like, no. You know, I'm like, no, we're not making that movie. And I ultimately was like, man, you know what's really cool about this? I don't know if people will get it or not, but I just love the fact that she beats her with her mind at the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think it was just kind of cool. Like, I felt like you went through so much. You fought through so much. You've battled. You know what I mean? And now it's like, psychologically, she beats her. You know, and I just thought that was kind of cool. So, yeah, man, I'm as you can see, I'm excited about the film.
Maybe we could talk a little bit about the choice to use Paula as Bria. I was wondering, what was it that led you to her, and why did you pick her?
You know, Paula was a first choice for me, and she was a very hard get for me. I mean, obviously, as an independent filmmaker, it's not like I'm like, okay, I can pick anyone in the world. She was the direct first choice based on the fact that I was a fan of her work in Deja Vu. I just thought she was great in that movie. I'm a fan of that movie. I thought the ability for her to have to believe someone has come from the future, right? was really cool, right?
Yeah.
But I hadn't seen her do that in, you know, 10, 12 years. And when I went through, like, the cast of everybody else, I was like, okay, well, I've been seeing her. I said, man, this is a fresh face for this world. And I love that she was biracial. I love the ability that, you know, she has her physique is, she's sexy and beautiful, but at the same time, she's very strong. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I just thought all of those things for Paula was great. And I said, man, when I first met with her, you know, we went back and forth with the script for a few weeks because she was like, I don't know. And I said, man, it just would be great to see you, like, strip, you know, she's so beautiful. It'd be great to just strip you down and see you, you know, stretch out as an actress and not rely on, you know, how beautiful you have to be every frame.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not worry about, you know, if you're going to get to date the guy in this movie. I said, man, this would just be a fantastic movie for you to do what I know you know how to do. And surprisingly enough, man, she was like, D, like, I want to do this. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I've been waiting to do. I've been wanting to grab, you know, bite into some material that, you know, would scar my elbow, you know what I mean? And hurt my knee. And I said, well, this is it. And man, I tell you, we didn't know what the journey would be when we first started. And we jumped into this film, man. And everybody, I mean, obviously independently, man, this movie is done for under $5 million. I mean,
wow.
We're rubbing sticks together, you know, and, you know, here we are week two and Paula's doing all of her stunts. She's diving out of stuff. She's hurting her wrist. She's falling on her knees, scraping her leg. And we're like, man, we're in it. And it was amazing, man. And it was great for me as a balance. You know, Roxanne Avid, who produced the film, she was fantastic because I had a barometer. I had a bunch of women on set that I could actually, you know, test things with. Speak about the project with daily. And for me as a man, that was really cool. You know what I mean? And, you know, obviously being raised by my mom as a single parent, you know, I've already been respectful of women, but this is a great movie to make just to show the strength of, you know, what they go through in this world. And, yeah, man.
You know, that was one of the things I thought was interesting is there's a scene where I don't want to give any spoilers away, where Bria calls another woman a traitor. I was wondering what it was, why you picked that term particularly in the film.
You know, I'll blow your mind, man. Here's what's crazy. We had a lady that was on set with us who was a victim.
Wow.
But here's where it gets more interesting. Not only was she a victim, young black woman, oh, she's a little older now, but younger black woman. But what ultimately happened to her after she was trafficked for so long, she became part of the organization and she began trafficking other people.
Wow.
Okay. And we found out, you know, during this process, I'm like, oh my God, this was the normal. I said, well, how would you, obviously everything in you, she was like, man, I've trafficked kids. I've trafficked mothers. I've trafficked boys. And she was like, just think about it, Dion, like, what better face than a woman? Mm. Right? Because they can get to another woman. They can get to a boy. They can get to a young girl quicker than a man could. You know what I'm saying? I said, man, this is the most evilest thing I've ever heard in my life. you know what I mean? Especially, like I said, especially as a parent, right? And now, you know, you automatically go to a place where you're like, damn, man, like, what's crazy is the psychology of that, because if you're in a store and say your little girl goes missing in a second and you start looking around, who are you looking for? The first thing you're looking for is a man.
Yeah.
Right? The first thing you're looking for is like a guy, you know what I mean? You know, escaping, right? Not the random white woman at the counter holding a bag of groceries. Hmm. You know what I mean? That is conspiring to put together the ring. You know what I mean? Or whatever it is. So the traitor line was very interesting for us, because we basically used that line as like, you're a traitor. Hmm. You're a traitor to women. Hmm. You know what I mean? To the gender.
Yeah.
And how could, you know, and we thought that was just a powerful, powerful moment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like I said, I think the end of the movie was very, very, to me, it had a lot of weight to it, based on the fact that here's a woman who is looking at this more so as a business, and here's another woman who's looking at this like, you're enslaving people. You know what I mean? Like, you are a slave master. And that's why I chose also to use, you know, the Nina Simone song. I just felt like, you know, I felt like as an African American man, you know, that's a very, very tough song that obviously projects a feeling when you hear it, right? Mm. And for me, this was the perfect movie to actually utilize it. I said, man, I'm going to use it here, because I feel like this is what we're going through now. And, you know, obviously you go online and, you know, I would tell no one to go research what I research, but some of the things that you see, like for this, like graphically in Mexico and other countries and, you know, in cities and, you know, even most recently there was a truck there in Texas at a Walmart that got pulled over it's broke down in the middle of the night in a Walmart parking lot, and the police tapped on the window. The guy got out making a whole bunch of excuses. I don't know if you've seen this. They opened the back of the truck, and there was six dead girls in the back and 14 other people tied up.
Wow.
This is 3 months ago. And right, and I said, man, this is insane. I thought this would be something that could live with people, you know, like The Vanishing did for me, you know, like Fincher often does. I wanted to do something where it lives with you.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of made something in that wheelhouse, and hopefully it'll work.
One of the themes that seems to be throughout the film is the idea of being blind to what's around you. I was wondering, you know, what Bria and John seem just blissfully unaware of what's going on around them. Can you talk about that theme and why you embedded it so much into the script?
Until something registers in you, you don't see it. Like, things are hiding right in front of us in plain sight. And I thought that was the most interesting thing about the film, right? And also at the end of the film, when she comes down the hill, right? Because what you think is innocent and nice, she comes down the hill and she's looking at everyone's a predator.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And here's an example of that. It's in the early 80s, going into the 90s, John Walsh, his son is Adam. He looks in a store, he turns away, and in 1 second, Adam is gone. Okay?
Yeah.
And then at that time, everyone's heightened, because it is now commonly known that truck stops, big stores, right, are where kidnappers are praying to take kids.
Hmm.
Right? And now what happens is, you now go to the store and now you're looking around. And I can't remember how many kids were taken between the 80s and 90s like that, right?
Yeah.
So much so to where this man goes on a crusade for the rest of his life. Well, it's kind of like that thing where now you look, and now when I go to the store, no matter what, my eyes are peeled.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm paying attention. I'm looking. Like my son, my daughter, you can't go out of my sight, right?
Yeah.
Because my defenses are up, because I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. When a long time ago, you'd be like, oh, this is just a store. Everybody's in here buying food or milk or whatever it is. And I felt like in the movie, that was like, that's what rings represent. They hide in blind sight, right? It's all the things that are layered there. It's the same exact way I was carjacked.
Yeah.
Right. I remember turning right and then turning right. And then I remember sitting there and I said, oh, I seen that guy at the light. Oh, I seen this guy right here before, too. Why is that man there? And then all of a sudden you realize, oh, man, it was four people involved in that. It wasn't just a random act. Like I said, these are small bursts of energy that you can show people. But, you know, the guys at the gas station hanging out and the way Missy plays with them. And then they're like, OK, that was just a random act. And she's like, yeah. And then the bathroom was a weird girl. And then you start adding it up. You know what I mean? Like, why are they here? Oh, it's a truck stop right there. They're transporting girls through here. This is a way station. They're stopping. They're doing whatever they're doing. And, oh, by the way, right behind those trees over there is where they're keeping them.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like, okay, it's super weird.
Wow. I really appreciate you taking the time, Dion. I know you're busy. And it comes out on the 20th. Is that right?
Yeah, it comes out April 20th everywhere, man.
Okay, thanks so much, Dion. I appreciate it.